Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. I think I told you that I'm starting the University of Maryland course that I teach pretty frequently. And I think it's actually 22 years ago that I started teaching this course. And this year I got 15 students. And one of the things I talked to them about is, you know, where are you? Where, what part of reliability in its grand scheme of things are you? And what are you trying to accomplish? And, you know, basically asking, why are you taking my course? And the course is really based on our book at this point. I have a few things up front about value and maturity, which is also in the book. And then I step through the six steps as the remainder of the lectures and the focus of the course, which, by the way, we ended up with 15 more sales of our books this month. So it was like,
very cool.
Yeah, it's doing well. But the idea is that in the discussions in this first week and a half of the course, is I've run into two people that have been in school the whole life. They went from graduate school right to their master's or PhD program. One of them loves the research and loves the dealing with writing a paper. And their question that prompted this idea for today was, what do you do when, you know, you go off and research something and it has no results? There's no correlation. There's nothing there. There's nothing to publish, kind of thing. And he was really thinking it through as an academic. And how do you pick programs that are not likely to fail? Yet if you know that much, then it's probably not worth pursuing as a research thing. And I'm like, okay, let me think about that. And then the next conversation I had was from a person in their master's program in reliability and just itching to get out to industry, to get into a company. And because they really felt in all the education and stuff they were getting was they're missing something. How do you actually use this stuff? And so they were both looking at different career paths and for different reasons and, you know, things that clicked for them in one point or another. And yet I was thinking with that first one, the one that was a PhD and doing research, how are you going to get any benefit from this course? And I thought, you know, it's actually just a framework. You still got to figure out what the vision and goals are. And where are the gaps and trouble stuff, you know, and so on. And I thought, you know, and I was talking to him about it and he's like, yeah, I see that. And, you know, you're picking different tools and techniques and stuff like that. And then we had a long discussion about how do you assess a research area to, is it fruitful or not? And it's sort of like estimating value. if it's unknown, if it could be solved, yet the solving it will have a really, not just a paper gets published, but have a impact on society. You know, something that provides a stepping stone for another great innovation or something like that. Then it may be worth doing. But the idea is that the reliability has so many paths. And I've got one that's fire safety and another student that's focused on mechanical engineering and wants to go into asset management, another student, you know, and so on. Yet you and I had very similar sets of experiences that led us to write a book on basically using product development as the platform for it. But when you back up from that, it's really it's broader than that.
You just stimulated a lot of thoughts. and so glad, it's so nice of you to be continuing that teaching and bringing the principles into University of Maryland. It's a wonderful thing. And that's a great school. What does a student, this is going through my head here. So someone graduates with a master's or PhD in reliability, what do they do? That's what's going on in my head. Because
One of my students asked that. So what do you really do?
Yeah. And the, you know, yes, what project they pick in terms of research is part of that path.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just reflecting a minute on what should a person do? Yes, some people, small number, will continue in academia and maybe become professors.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say anything against that. That's a wonderful thing. That's a calling. The question becomes then, can they gain in some way the knowledge and experience so that when they teach, they can teach within the context of the world applications of reliability, and how do they stay current?
That was one of the students talked about, you know, the course and professor remained unnamed, but it was stepping through the theoretical bits and bobs and how they all fit together. And it was like, you know, do I really need to know this in the real world? I argue, and it had no practical examples, no real world experience. And it was clear the person really hadn't worked in industry at any point in their career. And they were, you know, deep into supporting their research and stuff like that. And which is, you know, it's part of the overall process to make advancements and make improvements and understanding stuff. But my basic concept was, it's like, remember in high school or in early college, somebody said you need to learn calculus, and you probably thought, when would I ever use this?
Right.
Right. And I don't remember the last time I sat down and did it, you know, derivation or a derivative calculation, or, you know, I understand the concept. I've done it in times. If I needed to, I could. Yet I think it's more fundamental than that with any of these courses that are more theory-based or background-based. If you've never heard of or been taught anything about calculus, the concepts of, you know, the area under the curve or the optimization of a volume versus its dimensions, or those would be unsolvable problems without the knowledge of what calculus is. You know, velocity and acceleration and the mathematical differences between those things give you a tool to work those kinds of problems when it's not a stable system, or when you have the calculus goes into so many things that as engineers solve problems for us. And if you don't understand the fundamental concept of them, of that tool, it's really hard to know that it's even a solvable problem. And so she said, I never thought of it that way. And I said, then I chimed in and says, one of my advanced classes in physics was on tensor calculus. And I still haven't found any way to use that, even that concept, because when you're working in 14 dimensions, it's kind of beyond what we really care about and actually solving our day-to-day problems. So, you know, this is, there's some things we probably really shouldn't know or don't need to know, but that depends on your field.
And therein lies the advice for new reliability engineers is stay grounded in reality of how things are being applied and used. Yes, learn fundamentals really well. Find your niche, get really good at one thing, become aware of and have experience with lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really good advices in terms of how to develop your own skills. But then in addition to that, you want to get involved in the actual world that is applying reliability engineering and management. And how you do that is that there's a thousand different ways to do that. But let's just, each of us, here's an idea here for the podcast, mm-hmm. is give our advices to new graduates or people that are new in reliability and they're working in their career. What advice do we give them to have a really great career in reliability? What can we share from that 40 plus years of experience that we each have and with the newer people?
One that immediately comes to mind, and one of my students did ask this, you know, what should I do when I start, or how do I start? And she was very interested in saying, understanding that business was very important. Says, maybe I should stay in school and get an MBA before going into life. No, get started, you know, if you're in a company and doing well, the company will probably pay for your MBA if you really need it. And a lot of really good reliability engineers, you know, pick up what they need to know by business. But I'd say number one, the first thing you should do is listen. Get very good at listening. Yeah, you've got a degree and it's an advanced degree. That's great. And you know lots of stuff and you're biting at the bit to share it with other people, all this cool stuff, you know. But it's the reason it's the number one part in our soft skills section, you know, in the back of the book, is that you need to listen. What's important? What's the motivators for different people? How does things get done? You may spot areas where you could suggest a change or make a change and improve things and build your credibility. But the number one thing to get started and to build your credibility as a contributor to the organization is listen.
Okay.
And pay attention to it.
Sure. My number I don't know if it's the number one thing, but the thing that comes into my mind is to find a way to stay connected to customers that are using the product.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And that can be done. You don't necessarily have to be on the 800 phone line or go out to the
store and stand there, watch people buy your product.
There are ways to do that, but somehow stay connected to how customers are using your products and what kind of feedback they have, mm-hmm. no matter where you are in the company.
Yep.
With your new reliability engineer or your reliability manager, whatever, don't go sit in a silo somewhere, disconnected from the customers that are actually paying for your services.
Yeah. Well, a dovetail with that one. One of the pieces of advice I give is you're not alone. You're not the reliability program in and of itself. It's not incumbent on you to take a design or take a program or take a process or anything and then make it reliable. You're an influencer of other people's decisions and you're not the decider. So part of listening is what are those major decisions and then go, facilitate the right information or better information so that decision makers can make the right decisions and calculate value and all that other stuff. But part of it is that you can immediately, day one, we usually, I don't know if it's different now, maybe AI says tells you everything you need to know to get started, which I doubt, is your manager will say, all right, I can't spend all day with you, so go talk to Sarah over in finance and talk to Bill over in procurement and talk to, you know, Jane in manufacturing and kind of learn the ropes and what these different people that we're going to be interacting with do and work with and stuff like that. And one, it's to build a network and understand parts of the organization, what drives different, what are different priorities and all this other stuff. And yet it gives you an amazing opportunity to find champions, to find your partners. You know, I always, always suggest reliability engineers find a sympathetic person in marketing and in finance. Because if you need to figure out what is the cost of goods sold type stuff, or what's the variations on the financials of our warranty process and stuff like that, somebody in finance lives and breathes that all the time. They could help you understand those things and understand the dynamics of it and understand the forces that make decisions that are based on financial data, which is so important within many, many organizations. So find a partner there. And then same in marketing, which dovetails into understand the customers. A good marketing liaison is your eye into where the organization is saying is our customer base. These are our different cohorts or types of customers. These are our different, you know, ways we think about how they use it and so on. And it's a two-way street in both teams. Is we can ask them and prompt them to say, you know, we're really interested in the frequency of use or the types of environment it's being used in and stuff like that, rather than that here's an avatar of us, you know, somebody that uses our phone like traveling around the world or our device while traveling around the world in all these different environments and in and out of airports and planes and stuff like that, versus somebody that's a small business and works out of their garage. But the idea is get those liaisons in because you're not alone.
I had some other ones come into view with me just while you were talking there that sort of popped up. I use a two-year rule, which is I don't want a new engineer to go bouncing around every 6 months to different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to get involved and do a really good job where they are. And so I say, work on that 2 years, fictitious, but work on that for until you've really worked into it and understand it and you've done what you can and you've helped people.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can consider changing and, you know, changing your role or expanding, that kind of thing. Another one, and I want to build on what you said about network, which I completely agree with, is you can also network outside of the company and get involved in professional organizations or some type of networks, conferences. Ascendo has a lot of resources there. Get involved with other people and get to know them and listen to them, as you pointed out at the beginning. Number one, listen. Listen to their views on what's happening and learn from them. Networking can be very, very important. Another one that has been on my go-to list for forever is don't be afraid to talk to management. Some younger people are afraid to be in management meetings. You have to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get, if you want to advance and get your ideas, as you say, influence, in other words, influence other people, you have to be willing to talk to them. And that involves talking with line managers or middle managers, that type of thing. So you need to get
even procurement engineers.
Oh. Yeah. And in our book, we've got, you know, a whole chapter on the social skills and that kind of thing. So that's a good resource for it. But you need to augment your technical skills with the softer skills. Otherwise, your great ideas are just going to go into the ether.
Yeah. Well, that was one of my students commented on it. They got the book and they paged through it and says, I've never seen an engineering book that talks about listening and asking questions and presenting skills and writing skills and stuff like that. That's just not taught in engineering schools.
Right.
She said, I never even thought about that. And I said, vast majority of our work, whether in academia or in industry, is sales. Essentially, we're selling an idea, we're trying to influence a decision or influence funding or influence the direction an organization's going. Or and you can be a brilliant engineer, yet if you can't communicate effectively with other people, you're an island. You got to start your own company. And if you can't communicate well with your funders or with your customers, then you don't have a company.
That's right. That's right. So those softer skills are incredibly important. In balance, you want to have good technical skills, but also good softer skills. The last thing that came to mind, Fred, is don't be afraid to speak up when you have an idea, you see something that's not going the way it should, but make sure you've done your homework. And I've seen people, if you're tend to be impulsive, that could be a turnoff. In other words, if you haven't thought it through, you don't want to do that thinking through in the middle of a large meeting of people.
Yeah.
But if you feel like something isn't going the way it should, based on your personal values, your integrity.
Or something just doesn't look right and you're curious about it. It's a great entry into starting those discussions. You know, why do we do it this way? Why are we accepting 8% scrap, for example? You know, what was the economic trade-off there?
Well, and you're bringing up the right path, which is you don't have to lecture people. Asking questions is a great way. Ask and listen.
Yeah, I could go on and on with this, but it's part of it is dive in, be curious, listen, pay attention to what's the processes, because oftentimes organizations have stated procedures and techniques and stuff they say they do, and then they do something different. Don't be surprised. That happens. You know, a professor will tell you that we're going to have a test at midterm, and they have a test at midterm. There's no there's not a similar structure in organizations. You know, we might have a product lifecycle document that is a guide. It really is just, yeah, we say we want to get it launched by this date. Yeah, we're going to make a decision later if it really is that or not. And that's, your ears should perk up. How can I help with that decision? Let's look for opportunities, all kinds of cool stuff. But it's a good question. How do you get started? Now, the folks coming out of school, just graduating and going into industry and academia, they've got all this formal learning and they can bring it to bear right away. As opposed to, I think the majority of reliability engineers were tapped on the shoulder and said, all right, can you do this test? You can organize this. Yeah, can you look into that?
Yeah. Trained or not.
Trained or not. And then you go learn it. And I think the final piece, and then we should wrap this one up, is that just because you're out of school doesn't mean you should stop learning. Ooh, it's, you know, you really need to continue to take courses, explore stuff. There's plenty of resources, like all the MITx and all the online courses that are available on all kinds of subjects. And if you're a little weak on statistics, there's plenty of resources online to in local schools and everything else, just in conferences and workshops, those in books like ours, are all ways for you to continue to learn. And so if you see something, you don't know it, you already proved you can learn stuff. Go continue that practice.
Continue and never stop learning. Lifelong.
Yeah. Just keep going.
If you're a listener on this podcast, I've just taken notes from what we've been talking about, Fred, and I've identified, just circled 10 gems that we contributed here in the podcast of how to improve a career, how to make a really good career. And so it might even be worth re-listening to if you're really interested in the subject, because there's a lot of really good topics that have been brought up here, I think. And if you are a listener and have some other ideas you want to contribute or questions, what do I do when? Those are wonderful questions for us to consider. I'm in this kind of situation. What do I do?
Yeah, we can talk for half an hour and you still don't know what to do, but you know, your mileage may vary. I hope not.
Please get in touch and let us know what your thoughts are on your career, what you'd like to know, things that we could podcast on in the future on the subject.
Yeah, plus you'll get an answer right away. And you can get in touch with us a whole pile of ways. So over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR is a couple of techniques there. And Carl and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. And there's plenty of ways to get in touch with us. We love hearing these things and getting some response back to you. And then I think, oh, I need to talk to Carl about this, or I need to talk to Chris about this one and get, you know, another perspective. And then we hit record. So we enjoy it. We really, really do love the questions. So please don't feel shy about that. Maybe we should have made that our first recommendation. Ask us questions.
There you go. That's a good one.
It's a little self-serving, but yeah, we're glad to help if we can.
Nice discussion, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Carl. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.